Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. This is a real treat. We have in studio with us today one of the authors with the Bookstube events, and we want to welcome to KDWA again, Chris Norbury. He is here. He is an author. He's a mystery thriller writer, and he is going to be at the host author at the Bookstube virtual event, which is going to be on Thursday, April 21st at 7 o'clock p.m. We could not be more thrilled to see you. Thanks for coming in studio.
My pleasure, Mo. Thank you for inviting me again.
So this is so exciting because you are continuing the series of Matt Lanier. How many books does he have in him, I guess?
Well, this is the third. My new one, Dangerous Straits, is the third one. There may be more. I've already had people who have read it say, boy, I have a great idea for another story you can do. So people are giving me suggestions, and I'm keeping it open for more possibilities, but it's hard to come up with a good idea and hopefully make it work, but I'm definitely thinking about it.
So you did not close the door completely?
No. Spoiler alert, Matt does survive the third book, so he will be around to have more adventures if he so chooses, and if his author buddy decides to do it.
Yeah. To write about him.
Yeah.
So you talk about him like he is a real person. Do you feel like your characters are real people?
A lot of authors say things like, well, I just was transcribing what my characters were telling me to do.
Can I tell you, I interview authors that say that to me, that the book writes itself. I'm thinking, boy, that's a great job if you can get it.
Yeah, I don't buy into that at all. It's the author. I think what they're really saying is that the character seems so normal and natural to them that they can kind of put themselves in the character and have the character sort of tell them what to do. And I don't feel like that. I always feel like I'm the guy who's in control. But sometimes some scenes and some books are easier to write than others just because you're kind of immersed in the whole scene. Maybe not just the main character or a character, but you're kind of in the whole book as a player in it, and you can kind of imagine what's happening. So that's my personal thing. I don't believe these people are divinely inspired that their characters are actually talking to them, but I understand what they're probably referring
to. You understand what they're saying?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
To me, it's like a Ouija board, the way they were explaining it to me, that it just kind of like it writes itself, and I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah.
Your way of explaining it is better. Thank you.
Okay.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I am probably one of the more least likely authors you'd ever come across based on my background, just because I never even thought to write anything other than an email or a letter to somebody until I was in my early 50s.
What did you do until your early 50s?
Well, my previous several lives, the first one out of college was a public school band director.
Oh.
Up in Carlton, Minnesota, a tiny little town just west of Duluth. And I did that for 6 years. Then I got into financial planning for several years. That got me interested in investing, and I did a lot of investing since that time. And I also, when my wife and I first got married, we were kind of getting into drinking wine and tasting the different wines and everything, and that kind of turned into a serious hobby that led to working as a wine consultant up in Surtix liquor store in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Is that a real job?
It's a real job, yeah. We had a tie and an apron, and we're the experts who stand around and wait for a customer to come in and say, I need a bottle of wine to go with my meal tonight. What should I buy? Or we're going to somebody's house for dinner. What's a good gift of a wine bottle? So we're the guys who figure that out.
And kind of nice.
Tasted thousands of wines and got to be quote unquote an expert, but it was fun. And then I did after that. I only did that for a while. Then my wife got a job in Chicago, so we moved there. I got more seriously into just investing. And then when the Great Recession came along in 2007, 2008, I got disillusioned with that, and I decided I need something else to occupy my mind. I have a very inquisitive mind, I guess you could say, and I get bored easily, so I'm always looking for something to intellectually stimulate me. And for some reason, I thought, well, maybe I'll try writing. Why not? Yeah. And there's other authors like that who come into it later in life. They have a career.
But usually they have written short stories, or they've done more than just send emails.
Right. Yeah.
To people. people.
Yeah, they basically figured out early on that being an author is not a job where you can usually pay the bills by itself. So they have their day job and they keep on writing in their spare time.
Okay.
But I'm not one of those kids who was writing as soon as he could hold a pencil and had stories just bursting
out of my brain.
You were directing
probably back then.
Yeah, my interest was more musical, and that was my muse, I guess you could call it. So writing never really was even a factor, other than, you know, say doing school assignments or emails or letters to folks.
But that's the same side of the brain, right? I mean,
yeah.
Isn't music and writing, would they be considered part of the same side of your brain?
Absolutely. I don't know if it's left or right brain, but it's the creative side.
Yes.
Where you're attuned to your inspirations, sounds, music, words, whatever it happens to be. Anything that's a creative nature is that side of the brain. And then the math, science, logic, that sort of stuff, that's the other side of the brain. Music kind of is in both camps. And actually, writing is too, a little bit, because there's not quite so much science, but you have to be good at structure, at dialogue. You have to know your grammar, basically. I mean, you can hire an editor, but you need some foundation in grammar and what makes a good story. But music has got a ton of math and science in it. It's amazing how cool that is. But writing is still creative. Music is still creative.
When you decided that you were going to write a book, or did you even know it was a book? Did you just decide you were going to start writing?
I just thought, well, I'll start small and do some short stories, because that's, just test the water, see how it goes. And so I wrote several short stories, and back then in the late 2000s, it would be send them into a magazine.
Yes.
Or a literary magazine, or a short story writing contest that might have a small cash prize. And the idea was to get noticed by the literary community so you could maybe go into bigger and better things. So I wrote a whole bunch of short stories, sent them off. Nobody was interested, didn't sell any, didn't do anything.
What was the tenor of those stories?
One of them I wrote about a golf experience that I sort of had. It was sort of a fictionalized deal. Another one was a first line contest where all the entrants were given the same first line and you had to just go from there and write a short story. I wrote another one about a tree on the edge of the prairie that wanted to be out and able to run like the animals across the prairie.
Okay, you were all over the board with your topics.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's just, kind of, you'd get an email or something from a contest and they say, here's our contest and here's the parameters and go ahead and write a story. So I did that and it didn't really interest me that much. I thought, well, maybe. But I thought, I like this writing, so maybe I'll start writing a longer story. And that's when I kind of came up with the early idea for the first novel. And by then I realized, this is getting kind of expensive to learn how to write. So maybe I can use some of that shorter writing things to earn some money to pay for my classes and my books and things like that. And that was back in about 2010, 2011, when the internet was just going crazy and people were starving for content on all the blogs and the websites and things like that. So I started doing a lot of content writing. Basically, my big job that paid me the most money was writing reviews of investing websites, because I had a lot of experience with investing.
Wow.
And so the guy who had his website was a rating service of all these different investing websites and things like that. So his job, he said, go there, research, here's what I want to know, write it up, 600-700 words, and I will pay you and put it in. So I literally rewrote his website. I did 60 or 70 individual pieces for him. And so most of that stuff, if it's still on there, it's mine, if it's still valid. And that paid a little bit, but by then I was still working on my novel and getting more and more into that and deciding that, yeah, I think I like this long-form storytelling. And it was fun, it was challenging, but it took me several years to actually get a finished manuscript.
So the mystery thriller category is what the BookStube events usually focus on. And again, we're chatting it up with Chris Norber. He is going to be part of the virtual BookStube event on Thursday, the 21st of April at 7 o'clock p.m. And we will post a link to the event on our KDWA Facebook page. But I'm curious to know how you got into the mystery thriller genre. Was that something that you enjoyed reading?
Yeah, that was probably my favorite genre early on. Other than when I was a little kid, I was obsessed with sports, and so I read biographies of famous sports heroes.
You know, that's a great way, can I tell you, to get young boys to read.
Absolutely.
Who typically don't, they're not big readers,
yeah.
But you take them to the library and you take them down the biography section, and all of a sudden it's like, what? Pele wrote a book, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sure. It was great. And I was a kind of a traditional athlete. You know, my dad was a pretty good athlete, so it was baseball, basketball, and football. So I, especially baseball, I read every biography that was in the library, probably of the great baseball heroes from the earliest days up until the 1960s when I was a little kid. And then my fourth grade teacher got me interested in the Civil War, and I read a lot of Civil War books.
Okay.
When I was in grade school and junior high and high school. And I also, that's when I kind of got into mysteries. I don't know who first gave me a Sherlock Holmes book, but I was just totally wowed with Sherlock Holmes, and that stuck with me forever. I still to this day can't figure out how he, you know, solved some of these mysteries, but so it's always been a favorite genre. And I found that I don't really like other genres that much. I like historical fiction to a certain point, but I'm not a sci-fi or fantasy or dystopian or speculative fiction, they call it. And I don't think I'm a literary fiction type of person who can just write this beautiful, long, flowing prose that people just get absorbed in and read for hours and hours and hours. I do a presentation and I say, my style is way more Hemingway than it is Tolstoy. Kind of like to get to the point. I like mysteries and thrillers because you want to have a page turner that keeps you interested and is exciting and builds tension. And I'm finding that I'm maybe at least a little bit good at it because I've written three and people aren't telling me to quit. So that's a good sign.
Well, I think that's a fabulous sign. So this is a continuation of your Matt Lanier series. Mm-hmm. And you have left it open as far as if he's going to continue on.
Correct.
So in this book, what can we expect when you chat about it at the Bookstube event?
Well, basically, it was a little bit of a stretch for me because the first two books, first of all my books are set in Minnesota. I love Minnesota. I've lived here most of my life. So I wanted to set them in Minnesota. Dangerous Straits happens mostly in Minneapolis and kind of in the downtown street, urban, gritty sort of type thing, because when the story starts off, Matt Lanier, my main character, is homeless, he's a fugitive, and he's surviving by playing guitar on the streets for spare change. And so, and just to throw in a little bit more fun, he finds out pretty early on that he suffers from PTSD. So if you thought things were got bad in Straight River and then didn't get any better in Castle Danger, he's about as at the lowest point as he can get at the start of Dangerous Straits. But through events, you know, he's ready to just kind of pack it up and give up his fight against the bad guy. Somebody comes along who is in a position to help him stop the bad guy, and so he has to decide, do I give it one more shot and I'm exhausted emotionally, mentally, physically, and just go and hide under a rock, or do I give it one more try and see if I can finally prevail and bring this horrible guy to justice? So that's his big decision, and you'll have to buy the book to figure out if he survives or if he succeeds.
We know he survives.
He survives, but you know, he might end up going on the run again. We never know.
Oh, we don't, do we? When I talk to writers, it's interesting to me to hear them either say they know the end of the story and mm-hmm. they work back from there, or again, as we've said before, people that just say, no, the story just kind of writes itself.
Yeah. I'm a real, like a carpenter, craftsman type of person.
Okay.
When I write my books.
Structure.
I like to outline. One of my favorite authors, writing craft authors, teaches story structure as the most important thing. So I really get into structuring the story properly according to his take, which is basically what makes a good movie a good movie, a book a good book. You don't necessarily notice it, but it's there. So I make sure that I have good structure. And then one book I kind of had envisioned how the story would end, and another one I wrote an ending, and it turned out that didn't work for what made the most sense after I wrote the first 90% of the book. So it kind of goes back and forth. For Dangerous Straits, I wrote two endings.
One
was,
did?
Yeah, one was kind of an epilogue. It was sort of a continuation of what I would have called ending number one, and I had my beta readers look at it, and they said, well, ending number one doesn't really close things up very well, and the epilogue or ending number two is just way too much, and we don't really need that. So I kind of compromised and really fleshed out ending number one and added just enough of that epilogue ending number two to hopefully bring some really good, satisfying closure to the reader, because this is, I'm calling this, not, it's not only a series, but these three books are, I call them a trilogy, because it's the same main character and the same bad guy in each of the three books. So now the bad guy has been been dealt with, and anything that comes further will probably be some other challenge for Matt and his friends and family. So yeah, it varies, and I'm finding that each book I kind of write it in a different, whole different way. You know, the first one I hardly outlined at all. The second one I did pretty good outlining. Third one I wrote a 15 or 20,000 word outline, and I sent it to my editor and I said, "What do you think of this?" And he sent it back. He said, "Well, it's pretty good, except this one whole subplot thing doesn't work at all. I'm not buying this at all." So I totally scrapped that and I came up with another subplot that works better, I hope.
So are these subplots something you could put in another book? Do you know what I mean? Is it something that, or is it just dead to you completely?
The one that I deleted is, would have to be a really kind of intentionally constructed to make that work, because it was kind of far-fetched, but the general idea certainly could work again in another situation. Some of the other subplots, I had people telling me, well, you shouldn't have killed so-and-so and you shouldn't have killed off so-and-so, and you know, maybe I could do a situation where I had the same like friends of Matt and I didn't kill him off in a similar situation. And then there's always like a romantic subplot, which I had, I don't have a lot of romance in my books, but there's a little bit in there. Those could be done, you know, reused, you know, differently. And I've got actually new characters in Dangerous Straits that people who have read the book already say, oh, these two, you should have these two do their own story. That would be really cool. So, you know, it's...
So authors get lots of free advice, apparently.
We get a lot of free advice, yeah.
So I know you wanted to... actually, I would like to brag for you, because you probably don't want to, but you have a wonderful affiliation with Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and you really have been giving back to them, not only with your time, but also financially lately. So you want to tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, well, when my wife and I moved to Owatonna back in 2000, I had thought about being a Big Brother before we came to Owatonna. And then I found out that Owatonna has one of the three chapters in Minnesota, or it was Steele County, and I immediately signed up and ended up getting matched with a little brother towards the end of 2000, and we were, partly because of the skill of the staff and also just me and my little brother hitting it off, we stayed matched for 11 and a half years. And then I had a second one, so I was a Big Brother for a total of about 20 years, and then being the age I am, I kind of said, I'm sort of exhausted with this. COVID was happening at the time, so I bowed out. I call myself a Big Brother emeritus now.
Yes.
But when I started writing, when I published my first book, I wanted to keep on giving back to the program, and I thought, I'm going to donate $1 per book sale to Big Brothers Big Sisters of Southern Minnesota going forward. And then a year or so later, I started asking people to round up their change when they would buy books from me at a book signing, and so that added another $1.80, $1.75, whatever, depending on sales tax. And so over the years, with now my third book out, I'm proud to say that I've been able to raise more than $2,500 for Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I'm hoping to increase that dramatically this year. I make a donation at the end of every year, add up, you know, how many books I sold and all that. They let me go to their fundraiser things. I'll be doing Bowl for Kids' Sake. I have a table set up there and promote it. And anytime I go to a book signing or an event, a presentation, I will tell people about Big Brothers Big Sisters and encourage them to become Bigs, or think about it, or tell people they know who they think might make a good Big Brother or Big Sister about the program. So I'm kind of a roving ambassador for them.
Well, we're glad you roved into Hastings today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Really nice to meet you in person. Chris Norbury, he is the author of Dangerous Straits, which is a continuation of the Matt Lanier series. He is going to be part of the virtual Bookstube event on Thursday, the 21st of April, and that's at 7 o'clock p.m. And if you want to participate, you can do so from the comfort of your home, and we will post the link on our KDWA Facebook page. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.